You're about to enter into a new world of knowledge, curiosities, and high strangeness. This is a podcast of Straight Up Strange Productions.
Afternoon, good evening, whatever time it is, wherever you are when you are listening, this is the Monsters and Friends podcast. This is a podcast dedicated to the cryptids, legends, and lore of the world that don't get the spotlight as often as their rock star counterparts do. I am your Duncan loving host, Michael Patrick, and somewhere around the woods, connecting with his people right now, is my sidekick, Barry. We're still on this insane-orific journey that we call the Pod on Tour, while we visit each state and bring to you, the people, the cryptids, legends, and lore that aren't as widely known around the world. Once again, thanks to the modern invention of my brain, and a little bit of common sense sprinkled in there, this was a relatively easy week for us. Last week, we were enjoying some seafood and camping out on the beach near Hampton, New Hampshire, but this week, we've moved inland. We hopped on the 101 through Manchester, ended up popping on old Route 9, and pulled Winnie into the Green Mountain State. This week, we're parking old Winnie out by the Green Mountain National Forest and setting up camp. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Vermont. But before we get into Vermont and all the amazing things it has to offer, some housekeeping. First and foremost, I really want to extend an apology to the listeners. Last week, we put out a pretty good episode on New Hampshire. It is an amazing state with a lot of really strange and scary things peeking out from behind trees and stealing your clothes under lakes. However, when I ended up listening back to the show, I realized I made the mistake of putting the microphone too close to the campfire, and all you could really hear was popping and crackling, and it made it really hard to hear. So I wanted to throw out a big my bad on that one, and in the next week or so I'll try and clean that up a little bit more and re-upload it so that if you started it but you couldn't make it through because of the old snap, crackle, and pop, give me a few days and I'll make sure to clean that up for you. This week I'm making sure that the fire is a little bit lower and that I'm going to keep the microphone a little bit further away, so have no fear, rookie mistake solved, and I apologize. Also, I know I mention this every week, but I want to reiterate that I am a member of the Straight Up Strange podcasting family. If you want to listen to some amazing shows, some new and some older and established, head to straightupstrange.com and give some of the stuff on there a good listen. As I always say, eventually I'll have some links on monstersandfriends.com where you'll be able to go ahead and check it out and get right to the site from there. There's a lot of really great, diverse shows on there that you should definitely make sure that you check out. Along those lines, keep an eye on monstersandfriends.com and I'll be uploading some fun stuff to the website, recapping some of what we've already covered, and I'll be adding some new things as well. Barry has also told me that he has some plans of his own for a show that he'll put on there. So, you know what? We'll see what he does. Who knows? And finally, I'm going to be putting together a few shows here and there that talk about you, the listeners. If you've had an experience with a monster or experienced a true legend, I want to know. Go ahead and send an email to monstersandfriends.com and either write out what your experience was or go ahead and make a recording and I'll make sure to share it during a later show. I know that there have been some amazing people that have had some insane experiences out there, and I would love to hear about them. I shared my own early on in the podcast, and I'd love to hear yours as well. But for now, that's enough nonsense. You are not here for my rambling about podcast business. You're here for the goods. So let's get right down to it, right after a word from our sponsor. Dunkin' Donuts. I love you, 3000. Won't you be my sponsor? Hello, sponsor. And we're back. What a great sponsor. That might become someday, but probably not. But you know what? What I can 1,000,000,000% say for sure, though, is that I am back and we are ready to once again explore another amazing state with the stories and creatures that they have to share with everybody. Much like New Hampshire, Vermont is kind of a mecca for these creatures, it seems. Similar to its side-by-side state sister, Vermont and New Hampshire are incredibly wooded and very secluded. Vermont is actually the second least populous state in the Union, and only about 625,000 people call the Green Mountain State home. That in itself should give a bit of a lead into the cryptid count, right? The state is 80% covered by forest as well, and it shares a boundary with Quebec, New York, and New Hampshire, so it's surrounded by forest that would make travel and transport really easy for a small or even a large creature. This is the perfect destination for any creature looking for somewhere to call home that's nice, quiet, and fairly easy navigable. Vermont is also home to something called the Bennington Triangle, but we're not going to dive too deep into that. I'd have to throw the rabbit hole alert up if I were to delve into that, and I mean, it could be a podcast all on its own. Vermont is actually kind of a fun one, though, because we've touched upon this before. During our maiden voyage, episode numero uno, we explored the American Loch Ness when we touched upon the Lake Champlain Lake Monster, which we all know and love, of course, as Champ. Champ has been incredibly embraced by the people here, and there's actually a minor league baseball team here that is affectionately coined the Vermont Lake Monsters. But the thing is, Champ isn't where it ends at all. There's a lot of other cryptids, legends, and lore that Vermont has to offer, so let's go ahead and dive right in. Our first friend tonight is actually quite an interesting tale. This one falls into an intriguing category all of its own. By the time I'm done with it, it might end up sounding vaguely familiar, but this legend was far too amazing to bypass. So let's put our brains in that imagination station. Imagine that the year is 1820. You and your family live in northeast Vermont, where you tend to your fields during the spring and summer and harvest them in the fall. You take care of your cows and your sheep, make sure that they're fed and they're watered. You and your oldest head out and cut wood to make sure that the fire is stoked to cook over and to keep you warm when the winter winds bite bitter. One night, you're resting by the fire with your wife and you hear a noise outside. Something is knocked over your woodpile. You crack open that front door, ready to open up a can of whoop, and you look out and you see it. Our first tale tonight is that of a creature called Slippery Skin. What is Slippery Skin? Well, it sounds like some sort of scaly lake monster, right? Yeah. If you guessed that, well, you're wrong. Slippery Skin is actually a bear. Well, sort of. Maybe? As we talk about Slippery Skin, it's going to sound somewhat familiar. But let's start off with old Slip here and what he looks like. We have to take into account that a lot of this detail is fairly anecdotal and there are some first-hand-ish accounts, so we really can't be certain what Slippery Skin looks like exactly, but we have a pretty rough idea. Slippery Skin is described as being a bear that has black or very dark brown fur. Old Slip stands somewhere between 10 and 16 feet tall. A big part of this legend that differentiates Slippery Skin from a traditional bear is also that he's described as always being on 2 feet, and he's not usually, if ever, down on all four. He runs on his hind legs and his front just don't touch the ground. His footprints are said to be 2 to 3 times the size of a normal man's, and some have actually described him as being as big as a wagon wheel. The earliest recorded interaction with Slippery Skin and man dates back to about 1759, when a man named Duluth described a creature that he saw in the woods. He says the scouts were ever being annoyed for naught reason by a large black bear, who would throw large pine cones and nuts down upon us from trees and ledges. The Indians also being disgusted and know him and call him Wayhook or Wetskin. The Indians that the man is describing is the local Wabanaki tribe, which has seen this creature for decades. The whole reason that this creature was named Slippery Skin was because no matter what people did, native or white, they couldn't catch this beast. They'd set traps for it that it would somehow escape from. There's a story of an encounter with Slippery Skin that talks about a hunter having the creature dead in his sights, but when he fired, he missed. As if there was something there protecting the creature. And if they didn't miss, the monster would just vanish into the woods and disappear as if it were made of smoke or mist. Do you remember that kid in your neighborhood that took pleasure in absolutely terrorizing you? The one that threw rocks at your house, knocked over your trash cans, ripped up your garden? Well, say hello to his inspiration. It's said that Slippery Skin absolutely adored terrorizing the people of northeastern Vermont. He wasn't a timid creature that didn't like people and stayed away from them. He took joy in making their lives as agonizing as possible. Other examples of things he did was scaring the literal feces out of sheep and cows, running through cornfields, stomping down the corn, and ripping up their fences so the animals could escape. For whatever reason, it seems that Slippery Skin has some sort of weird vendetta against people. My best guess? It lived in relative peace and quiet until us pesky humans invaded its space. I'd say that's some pretty good motivation right there. For not a lot of information being available out there about Slippery Skin, there's some fairly good stories. Well, good in the fact that it describes some encounters with the creature in four of the bigger towns in northeast Vermont. There's some stories posted through the local gazettes that I took a gander through, but this one was undoubtedly my favorite. Here it goes. The story is told that in Westmore, long ago, a group of German clergymen were picnicking on the shore of Lake Willoughby one day when they were suddenly set upon by the bear Slippery Skin, who had wreaked havoc and fear upon the settlers in these parts. The clergymen were forced to make a swift retreat for the safety of the woods. A short while later, one of the clergymen was reported missing. Authorities found a mutilated body in the underbrush. Later on, it was deemed that the quote-unquote body was actually the mangled remains of several cheese strudels which had been part of the clergyman's picnic lunch. The missing clergyman was later found alive and well, it is said, in Chicopee, Massachusetts. I mean, this story is hilarious. It just made me crack up. There are a few more accounts that have been printed in local gazettes throughout the course of the 1800s. I will make sure to share some of those other stories on the website later, as a lot of them are pretty amazing just like this. This brings out the biggest question in all of this, though. What was Slippery Skin? He was a bear, right? But he walked upright on 2 feet, and while I've visited a bazillion schools, I have yet to see one do that consistently. He also seems to have done a fair amount of things that one would need, say, an opposable thumb for, such as throwing rocks or grabbing fence posts and ripping them out. Let's consider the time frame of all this. We're talking 1700s and 1800s. This is the time frame when we're really starting to settle into the country. Towns are popping up, people are claiming land. We're seeing things we've never seen before, and it would be super easy to say that this was just a large, crazy bear. If I had a guess, though, I would say that this creature was something other than a bear. You know, Bigfoot really didn't become a thing in the United States until about 1958. Perhaps Old Slip here is one of our earliest Western encounters with what we now know as Bigfoot. I'd say that sounds pretty plausible. As much as I'd like to believe that this was just Yogi Bear experiencing some sort of roid rage, my best guess is that Slippery Skin is some of the first Bigfoot experiences that we've had in our country, and to me, that's pretty darn cool. We're going to go ahead and we're going to stay up in northeastern Vermont for our next friend. This friend happens to be our weekly aquatic ambassador and, like last week, is a pretty intriguing creature, or potentially series of creatures. We're going to hop in the old boat and head on over to Lake Willoughby. This is hands down one of the most beautiful places I have ever seen. It's a large glacial lake that covers about 1,700 acres, stretches 5 miles from top to bottom and about a mile wide at its widest. On the northern edge of the lake, we have Mount Pisgah, which offer some amazing views and habitats for once nearly endangered falcons. However, that is not all that lurks here. Lake trout are here and they're terrifying. Well, I mean, they're really not, but you know who really is? Willie. That's right, Willie. Oh. Or, other times referred to as the Lake Willoughby Lake Monster. That's right, Vermont has a few lake monsters of their own, but Willie seemed like a pretty interesting pick. Why, you ask? Well, I'll explain, but before I do, what is Willie? Willie is a weird one. He's been described, but not by many people. When we're talking about the Loch Ness Monster or even Champ, we're looking at something like a plesiosaur, right? Maybe. This seems to be the most plausible considering the descriptions that we see of them. But as far as what Willie is, it's hard to say exactly. In 1868, in the Caledonia newspaper, there was a report of a 12-year-old boy named Stephen Edmonds. Young Stephen Edmonds was apparently taking his sickle for a walk near the lake when he spotted a giant, slithering creature. Like any warm-blooded American, his first choice was to slice that thing in half. Dead it did become. When they measured the creature out, it was 23 feet long. Of course, this was before we just made up stories, so the paper didn't really make any guesses as to what it was or even to describe the creature. Most modern-day smart people believe that it was most likely some sort of eel. A 23-foot-long eel in a freshwater lake in picturesque Vermont. Okay. No thank you. The largest freshwater eel on record tops out at about 7 feet long. That's a bit of a difference there. Interestingly enough, though, there was a report in the 1950s that a group of Navy divers were trying to recover the body of a fellow sailor that had drowned in the lake. They got down to the bottom of the lake, and there they saw numerous eel-like creatures swimming around that they estimated were somewhere around 8 feet long. Once again, the longest on record were about 7 feet long. So what they saw weren't traditional eels, right? There are other reports of seeing Willie that say he had the head of a seal but had a long serpent-like neck. In the mid-80s, a lady from New Jersey reported seeing a long, dark creature with two or three humps in the middle of the lake swimming towards the south end. The woman went back to grab her camera, but of course, like any self-respecting lake monster, Willie was gone way before she got back. That sounds a lot like some sort of serpent. If you've ever seen a water snake slithering along the surface of the water, the way they move can definitely give the impression of seeing humps in the water. Just the way the water moves around it can kind of give that view. What does that make Willie, though? We don't really know, I guess. But an educated guess would say that Willie's probably a sea serpentish creature of some kind. He's long and skinny like an eel and swims as such. It's not completely out of the realm of possibility, right? Local folklore says that Lake Willoughby and another local lake connect with each other via an underground passage. Lore says that one winter, a team of horses crashed through the ice at Lake Willoughby and washed up on the shore of a place called Crystal Lake. Yet, this is another potential reason why it's so hard to find solid evidence of these creatures, minus the stories that we get about them. But therein lies why this was so interesting to me. There's another lake monster not too far away from where Willie calls home. It's called Memphra. I think it's Memphra. It resides in Lake Memphremagog, and there have been many sightings of a serpent that calls that lake home. Memphra is also a creature that's described as looking very similar to Willie. But here's where it gets really interesting. In last week's pod, we talked about the Dublin Lake Monster. It's a creature that is rumored to live in underwater caverns below Dublin Lake. Well, it's creatures, perhaps, right? I don't know. Let's put on our tinfoil hats for a second here, okay? What if all these creatures are somehow connected? They all seem to be described fairly similarly, right? They're all ear-like creatures that live in underground caves and caverns. Young Stephen sliced the 23-foot one in half a century and a half ago. The 8-foot ones reported in Willoughby were perhaps young creatures. In my humble, completely unfounded opinion, it's sounding kind of like these are perhaps a legitimate creature that isn't some scary, terrible lake monster, but rather a creature that's just perfected how to get us to leave him the heck alone. I can't say for sure what Willy is, but honestly, but it sounds like there might be more to his story than meets the eye. I've loved cryptids, legends, and lore for a super long time. Ever since I was a kid, I've read tales of different creatures and the lore that goes around with them. There's some amazing stories that accompany these creatures, and a lot of them have some pretty cool names. With that being said, the next/last monster that we're going to search for this week may just have one of the coolest names of any cryptid that I've ever researched. We're going to stick around where we currently are, but we're going to take old Winnie just a little bit north towards the Canadian border. Today, we're heading to a small town called Richford, Vermont, and we're going to go ahead and search for a creature named The Awful. I know what you're thinking, too. Something named The Awful sounds less like a cryptid and sounds more like something that George R.R. Martin would have put in one of his Game of Thrones books. Honestly, it sounds like it'd be a pretty amazing, really BA creature. Unfortunately for us, though, The Awful, while having the most awesomest of monster names, is pretty meh on the monster scare. Before we tell you why, let's stick with the awesomeness and tell you a bit about what makes our friend The Awful so cool. To get an image in your brain of what The Awful looks like, imagine a griffin. Think of a creature with the body, arms, and legs of a lion. Strong and powerful. Now, add the head and the wings of an eagle. That's a griffin. The Awful is said to be pretty similar to this. However, instead of the golden hue that a griffin generally would impose, let's throw in skin that has like a grayish hue to it. On top of that, we'll go ahead and add a long serpent-like tail that some have even described as possibly being like that of a scorpion. However, I think that description is probably just of a bit of a misnomer, as in some representations, the tail of this creature has a tuft-like thing at the end that I could easily imagine someone mistaking for a scorpion tail. And let's not forget that The Awful has these huge, strong claws that could easily grip a milk can's girth. That's pretty big. It's been described as an awful winged monster. Yep, I'd say that's a pretty fair assessment. But here's the thing, though. This is a giant, terrifying winged monster that could probably do a fair bit of damage, right? The claws, the beak, the tail. This thing could hurt whatever it wanted. Well, it really doesn't. The Awful's finishing move of choice? Creeping you the F out. What do you mean, you're probably wondering? Well, the Awful's quote-unquote thing is to watch you. Like, fly over your house, land, and then stare at you. And this dates back to the first encounter with it. There were three dudes that worked at the local sawmill. One afternoon, they were walking across the Main Street Bridge in Richford when they saw something none of them would ever forget. Perched atop the Bowright Building at the corner of Main and River was the creature dubbed by the locals as The Awful. It menacingly stared at the three men as they crossed the bridge. They stopped and stared at the creature when one of the men suddenly suffered a heart attack. They had to carry the poor guy home, and it was said that for weeks on end he would wake up his whole family while screaming out in terror throughout the night. Just a few weeks later, the beast was spotted again when it was seen flying high above a field near Lost Nation Road. According to an eyewitness, the creature was carrying a wailing human baby in its claws while it flew. It's pretty scary, right? After really thinking about this, I'm thinking that odds are fairly strong that this was probably just an animal, and it was going to take this thing home and make a dinner. If you ever heard a coyote in the wild or any kind of wailing animal, you'd probably swear that it was a baby or some sort of child. There have been quite a few other cases where people have claimed to see The Awful perched atop their roof or their barn just sitting there staring at them. It's caused quite a fervor around the Vermont town that it attracted quite a following. One such person that was really interested was acclaimed sci-fi and horror author H.P. Lovecraft. He traveled to Richford in Berkshire to find out as much as he could about the creature. Of course, he never actually saw it, but he did talk to many of the locals about their encounters. After such interviews, he said that the townspeople were not mistaken in the least about what they had witnessed. He went on to say that the awful became ample sustenance for my imagination, and over time the creature became the basis for many of my own fictional inventions. After these sightings in the 20s, the awful seems to have dipped out pretty much. There have been reports here and there since the new millennium, but it seems it's pretty few and far between. A man does claim that a logger from the Richford area once gave him a petrified awful jaw that has many large, gross, petrified teeth on it. It was sent to the University of Vermont to be analyzed, but there's nothing on the interwebs about any kind of results or anything that they see. That does bring up a rather good question, though. What the heck is the awful? I seem to see two schools of thought on this, with a bonus third. The first, ready? I bet you can't tell what I'm going to say. If you're playing M&F bingo, you can cross off the misidentified animal box. That's right. Most seem to think that this is some sort of large bird that just got labeled as the awful, and people's imaginations have just run wild. Also, along the imagination plane, quite a few folks believe that this entire thing is a giant hoax perpetrated by the townspeople to try and attract more visitors. Truth be told, however, it seems that most actually do believe in the awful. The belief is that it's a yet undocumented creature that's managed to survive pretty much out of the view of people, minus when it makes itself known. But the fact that it's been spotted carrying a meal, and there's supposedly a jawbone that's been found, might point to this creature's existence. There have been a lot of sightings of the creature, and while some were probably a little bit embellished, who's to say they aren't mostly true? It may be a large bird that hasn't been fully documented. Who knows? It might be a pterodactyl that somehow survived throughout mankind's uprising. I mean, we don't really know any of the answers to these questions. But in all honesty, that's why it's considered a cryptid. The definition of a cryptid is an animal which is commonly not believed to exist, but actually may. I'd say the odds of the awful being something is pretty damn good. But then again, as I've stated before, I'm a pretty terrible skeptic. Vermont is a place that's absolutely gorgeous. The beauty of the towns, the mountains, the lakes, everything. Are there monsters in the valleys, on the hills, and beneath the waves of all that beauty? It's very plausible in this guy's mind. But H.P. Lovecraft summed it up pretty damn good. In 1927, he wrote, "Entering Vermont for the first time, there is a sense of mystic revivification. Something in the contours, something in the setting, has the power to touch deep, vital strings of feeling which are ancestral if one be young, and personal if one be old." And with Mr. Lovecraft's words, I think that it's time that I put out the fire and head into the old Winnie. I think it's time to count some sheep squatch as they jump over my brain fence while I drift off to sleeping bliss. As always, this podcast wouldn't be anything without you, the fine listeners. I know that I'm late this week, but hey, here it is. We should be back on Wednesday next week just like normal, but until then, you guys know what to do. Tell your friends about the pod. Ask them to subscribe so that when it comes out, bam, it'll be right there for them to listen to. The podcast is available on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Mr. Ray Ray's podcast Downloader Mabob, Google Play, and honestly, probably wherever you can get your podcasts. Also, make sure that you head to the wonderful Straight Up Strange podcast family website. There are a lot of amazing podcasts there, and I encourage you to listen to them. So go ahead and head over to straightupstrange.com, or feel free to check them out on Twitter at Strange Podcasts. Also, don't ever forget, make sure that you follow us on Twitter. You can find us there at MNF Pod. You can find us on Instagram at Monsters and Friends, or check us out on Facebook. Just search for Monsters and Friends, and there we be. I'll also make sure that I put all the social stuff in the show's description, too. And as always, I appreciate the holy shiz out of you. We could not make this happen without you. And it's been real, but it's time to hit the sack. So thank you so much for stopping by the old Winnie, and we will chat again real soon.